we get things underway by welcoming back to the program, well, a man who's worn many hats through the years as an NFL executive, scout, general manager, a broadcaster, bar none, invented this whole thing, this whole idea of sports talk back in the 1970s, the author of a wonderful book, along with Ron Borges, Present at the Creation. Happy to be joined by our friend Upton Bell. Good afternoon, sir.
Rich, good afternoon to you, and may I try this aperitif on your audience and you. Two dying things right now, baseball and the Republican Party. And at the same time, when you look at these particular institutions and how they relate to Maine, it's really interesting that today I went and looked up all of the great heroes of Maine, starting out with Joshua Chamberlain, who really saved the Union's fanny at Gettysburg. I think he went back as the president of Bowdoin College. I'm not sure, but I know he was a teacher there.
He was the president of Bowdoin and served four terms as governor of the state.
There you go. Margaret Chase Smith, who stood up to McCarthy, yep. And it always will be remembered in history. Your owner, Stephen King. Is there ever a more independent person who spoke his mind both in his books, on Twitter, and every place else? You think of just John Ford, the statue of John Ford in Maine. Many of the people who were so independent, and now we're taking a look at a Republican Party. I'll start with them first. And Susan Collins, who had an opportunity to not only walk in those footsteps, but to stand up in a time where this country has become totally lawless under the Republican Party and Donald Trump. And I think to myself, all of those people and many more that came from Maine, and that's why I've loved the state so much, visited it many times, there is an independence. There is a feeling, you know what, we're going to stand up for what's right. I think that's lost.
I think back to our young congressman in the early 1970s, Bill Cohen of Maine, who was on that House Judiciary Committee, who bucked his own party to vote for impeachment.
There you go, George Mitchell. I mean, how many from a state that people say, Maine, well, first of all, Maine's bigger than the rest of New England. But I think of all of the heroes and the people that stood up, and as you pointed out, Bill Cohen. And I think of the Republican Party. And I thought of all the people that could follow in those footsteps. And again, I'm not trying to pick on Susan Collins, but did you ever think that Mitt, I'll go along with anything, Romney would be the one person
yeah.
that stood up and said, my conscience, and I say, oh, my God, I'm going to pass out in the chair watching this. But Susan Collins had that opportunity to be the person in history. And you only get one chance to stand up and say, you know, on behalf of my state, I don't believe what this man stands for or our country. She didn't. And I think in some ways history will remember that as history. And you and I have talked many times about it. We'll remember. And I am not a member of the Democratic or Republican Party. But I did come from a family that was deep into politics at one time.
Right.
Most people think of me as sports, but I had an uncle who was the lieutenant governor, and then Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. A grandfather who was the attorney general. So I think I'm pretty up on politics. I don't care for either party. I'm an independent. But what I do care about is what has happened to a country, which brings in some ways to, at the same time, look at a sport that we all grew up with. I mean, I actually, Rich, sat in the dugout with Connie Mack back in the 40s and 50s. I saw the great Willie Mays, the Boys of Summer, all of it, when baseball was king. And yes, I'm sure that there was cheating going on then, but now baseball is something that I think of when I think of a sleeping pill. And it is a shame, because the real people who participate in this, they've gone after the owner, they've gone after the general manager. The manager, in this case, Cora, who to me should never work here again. But the players, the people who did the actual cheating, are the ones, because of the player association, that the commissioner is letting off the hook. Do you and I know any sport where a player's been caught cheating, whether it's drugs or anything else, that the player isn't punished? Oh, my God, yes. Baseball.
Well, and Upton, I think in both cases, it's because people took the easy way out. It's very simple to be a moderate in normal times in America, and Susan Collins got away with calling herself that for years. But in the times we're in now, it requires action, and it requires a boldness, and it requires taking on the people, like not just the president. He's a minor player in this. It's the Mitch McConnells of the world and what they've done. And she did. She cared more about her friends in the Senate and that job, I think, than she did about America. And in baseball, Rob Manfred and the weak, weak people that run the game, rather than take on the Players Association, decided to also take the easy way out.
So you succinctly pointed out they are called enablers. Yeah. And any time in a democracy or a theocracy, as baseball is, that the enablers enable the people that are performing every day to do that, we have got chaos. And I really think if you add to it, although there was no cheating there, but look at three of our major institutions, the Republican Party, baseball, it used to be America's pastime, and newspapers. And did you think in our lifetime or your audience lifetime we would see the end of practically all three? Because I can tell you, people are not. The cell phone is the new weapon of choice. The people that are coming up today are not going to watch 3 or 4 hour games. They are not going to sit around and listen to baseball talk and the things that fuels generation after generation, just like they don't read newspapers anymore. They're on their phone. They barely read, period. And again, that's fine. Every generation is different. And then you have the great party, allegedly, of Lincoln, that essentially, if they were in battle, would be cited for cowardly actions in the face of the enemy. No. I have never seen anything like this, and I am not somebody that is sitting around and saying the world is all bad and things are never the way they used to be. I really don't care.
You know, Upton,
they used to be. I just care, and I think your audience, and I think you do. I care about now, and boy, we are losing it all there.
Upton, one of the things I've noticed with my college students, it's Bruce, is that they grew up in houses where their parents stopped getting the newspaper a while ago. And while they read, and they don't read newspapers, when I ask them how they get their news, you're right, they get it on the phone. They don't sit and watch a news broadcast either. So I'm wondering if you look at all the three things you're talking about devolving, it isn't more that the people have not only given up on things, but they've been so distracted that they don't even see those things destroying themselves.
I think you're absolutely right. And again, if people got their news, I don't care how they get their news. And if the generation you're talking about, I have a cell phone, I have a computer, I have every accoutrement you can think of. But yet, I find a way to sit down and read a long article or a long story, a book, something that will infuse in me more knowledge about what I'm dealing with. Now, if I just go on Twitter, and you and I are on it, and I have a lot of fun with it, make wise-ass remarks and everything else like that. But that's just, to me, instant news. But then I go to the books, the long articles, the things that are going to educate me. And I would like to recommend and recommend you get him on. One of the most fascinating books I've read is The American History, Conversations with the master historians of spying, a person by the name of multi-billionaire David M. Rubenstein, who actually went out and interviewed everybody that you can think of, John Meacham, you name them, and asked them about, in the case of Ronald Reagan or Lyndon Johnson, Robert Caro on them. And ironically, Rubenstein, I think, is either a friend of Trump's or whatever it is. He's a billionaire. But what he did with this book, and he wrote me a two-page letter on it when I asked him to inscribe it, is he interviewed separately 20 or 30 of the greatest historians of our day on their particular expertise, H.W. Brands, on who was the real Reagan. It's amazing. And I recommend it to you, to your audience, to just read that. Read maybe a chapter a day of this. You don't have to read the whole thing. But it infuses me with the idea that these people, even with all of their foibles, rose to become leaders. And now I look at myself and I'm saying, wow, what a choice I have here. If I go one side, I've got, in my opinion, a criminal who's a president. If I got three or four other sides, I got two guys that are essentially, when they get out, they'll be 200 years old, and one's got a heart problem, and then claims the other one has a heart problem, and one of them is spending billions. I mean, it's, my God, where is the Margaret Chase Smith? Where are these people?
Well, someone said once upon a time, we often get the government we deserve. Is this the price of our inattention as a nation?
Well, I think it's partially that. But I think the other thing is that it's been a growing problem. And I understand you could cite the Kennedys. You could cite a rich Lyndon Johnson. The irony is the one person who was going to be impeached and resign, Nixon, didn't come from any money.
Right.
None. And yet the other ones. But today, look at it. Every 4 years, there's another billionaire running for office. And so if you don't have the money, if you're one of the underclass that don't have the money, you're not going to get there. I don't care how good you are. What does that say about us as a nation? I don't know.
Well, and I think part of this, Upton, is the notion, and we've tried it in the past. We tried it with Herbert Hoover back in the day, the idea that the government could somehow be run like a business. And that's, the government is the opposite of a business.
It is. And the other fear that I have, and I'm going back to Republicans, not that the Democrats should get off the hook either over a period of history. But basically, the people, and I'll give you, for instance, last night I was watching the debate between Kennedy and Markey. And I'm saying to myself, all right, Markey's been there forever. But Kennedy is debating him. I'm saying, for what? What are his bona fides? What has he done? And he's trying to make a case to replace somebody. He's already a congressman, and what he's saying, I said, oh my God, stop the platitudes. And that's worth the 30-second soundbite generation. And you're right about Hoover, and maybe there's no answer to it now, but I always think of this, no matter who's president. The first day that Obama's elected, and Mitch McConnell is asked, well, what do you think about the president? And Obama was really open to working with everybody. I said to myself, is he going to learn? Yeah. And he said, more or less than I'm paraphrasing, he said, my one job in life is to make, this is the day he's elected, is right, to make sure that he doesn't get elected the second time. I'm saying to myself, I don't care what your party is. Did you ever hear any congressman or senator or leader of the Congress say the minute somebody's elected that my one job is to make sure that he isn't reelected?
Well, and that's why it's, I think it's so difficult as somebody who teaches young people about civics and government in high school. It's hard to get them to believe, as we all did growing up, that our system can work when they see people whose primary goal seems to be job preservation, not working with the other side to do what's best for the country as a whole.
Well, you're right. And the old-time politician, certainly, once you grab that power, you don't want to give it up. I understand, and to them, it's more important than money. We can see that. But they get their job. Even if you thought, all right, let's get their ass out of here. But they did their job. Now, these guys don't do their job. They just work at getting reelected. So I can understand your class and that generation of being very, very cynical when they see the president of the United States, literally. I mean, look at the people that were pardoned yesterday. I would just tell you this, and I found it very fascinating. Last night, Eddie DeBartolo Jr. was pardoned. Eddie DeBartolo Jr. is in the NFL Hall of Fame. He paid off the governor of Louisiana to give him one of those gambling boats under the table, a federal crime. And yet, he's pardoned yesterday, and I see Jerry Rice on talking, and I think Jimmy Brown was talking with Jerry Rice at Playville.
And Joe Montana.
His excuse was that, well, he really was great with the players. He made everything great for him. Never, ever looking at the whole thing. He did do a great job. He spent a lot of money and made it, but he broke the law. And Blagojevich is on today saying he really was framed. This is a guy that was selling Obama's seat. So I hope that your class, whatever they think, have some outrage and grow up, well, they're already growing up, to a little less cynicism and a little bit more of saying, like I would ask and hope, Susan Collins, make these people toe the mark.
That would be a wonderful thing. We're talking with Upton Bell here on Downtown Upton. We had Jeff Barn on with us a couple of weeks ago talking about the wonderful series that he is doing with you, some great work so far. Are there more chapters in the works of your fascinating life and your family's long connection with the NFL?
I will send it to you. We have two more coming out in the next week. One that you'll find, and I just found out that Howard Baldwin, who used to own the Whalers and has been out in Hollywood for years now, is doing a series on the leagues, the ABA, the old National Hockey League, and the WFL, which I was in. I owned a team in. And basically, you will see in the next 2 weeks my full-time look at what it was like with the Colts in the 60s. What was that era like? And then also, my owning of the World Football League, which I encountered the following: Arnold Palmer, George Sauer Jr., who the FBI called me and said, Is he hiding Patty Hearst? Ted Turner. And the final one, you and your audience will absolutely love, is the person that gave me a check for $100,000. And one day later, I found out that he stole the plane in Tennessee. He was in the witness protection program, stole a plane, flew it to Charlotte, handed me a check that bounced, and then found out that he was put in the witness protection program because of the mafia situation in New York. They thought he had squealed on him. And Geraldo Rivera, and Jeff and I are trying to find the tape, Rich, of Geraldo Rivera talking this guy off that gave me a check that bounced off the Verrazano Bridge because he was trying to commit suicide.
Wow.
In the afternoon.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's just really something. Did you see the ones, I think I sent them to you, and Jeff did a great job on the two segments of the race in the South?
I did, and they were tremendous. And we talked with Jeff about those and the story. And you've told us the story before as well about being in Memphis and being told to get out of town right around April 4th, 1968, just before the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Well, and on that, then I'd love to be able to get, because in the first segment, I tell the story about growing up and playing on the playgrounds with George Raveling.
Yes, who you just saw recently, right?
Who, what? What'd you say?
And you just saw George Raveling recently, right?
I talked to him, and I think it'd be a great interview for you. He's now 84 years old, and he basically was honored as by Washington State, where he coached one of the places besides Southern Cal. He still works for Nike, but somewhere he has the original Martin Luther King speech, which King gave to him.
Right.
And it's in a bank somewhere. He's been offered millions for it. Nobody knows what's going to happen to it when he dies, but just a tremendous character. But all of these stories you will eventually get. So we still have to do after that three more segments on my grandfather on the mother's side, who had 11 children and whose son was my grandfather, who was chief of detectives for the New York City Police, never finished high school, spoke six languages, and was an undercover cop. And his father, if you go, and it's in my collection online, and put in Uncle Pat's Cabin by William Cleary Upton, 120 years later, it's still on Amazon. It was a bestseller. He was thrown out of Ireland, he and a group, for trying to blow up a British police station. So we haven't even gotten to that yet.
Well, fascinating story. We look forward to hearing more. Always a treat for us to have you on the show. Upton, thank you so much, as always, and we'll talk with you again very soon, I hope.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate it.
Upton Bell on Downtown.